Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the latest edition of Ladies Night, the podcast devoted to girls high school basketball and women's Division I women's basketball recruiting. I'm your host, Coach Bill, coming to you from the Big Apple, New York on this Wednesday, January 18th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Good to be back with you again. Another week into January in 2017. And I'll look to once again be joined by my right-hand man, Brett McCormick, the elite recruiting analyst from the All-Star Girls Report, as we will look to bring you the latest women's basketball pledges from across the country. And Brett also got a chance to cover the Crossover Classic event in Atlanta, Georgia. So we will certainly look to get his recap and see what players stood out to him. But, again, another week back at it. Certainly there have been a few pledges across the scene in women's basketball. So, recruiting never stops, and certainly young ladies and their decision-making never stops as well. And, again, the events never stop, and neither does Brett McCormick, by the way. And certainly anybody who's followed this show and is familiar with Brett McCormick at all, the man is just relentless every week and every weekend, pretty much 365. He's either out at a high school event or an AAU event, and the man pretty much has seen them all and seen it all. He's also, as many know, a former college basketball coach, so that we also certainly value his takes because he's able to make evaluations with the understanding of what will transfer to the college level. So we will look to bring in my right-hand man, Brett McCormick. Brett, how are you today?
I got lost there. I was working. I lost track of time.
I was going to say, I'm glad you said it, because I was going to say, it's been now a couple of shows in a row where I've seen you sneak onto the switchboard pretty much at the last minute there. So I was going to call you on it, but you beat me to the punch.
Yes, but present and accounted for. So there you go.
Well, that's it. As I was just saying before you came on, pretty much, relentless Brett. He just never stops 365. He's always out something, every week, every weekend you're out of something. And it's just, you're like the male. You're always present and accounted for, whether it's on the beat or it's here at the ladies night.
And actually, I just came from a ball game. My daughter was cheering, but I went to JV and part of a varsity game at my daughter's high school, and it was girls. So I was at that. So I just got home a few minutes ago from that.
I'm starting to think, Brett McCormick, that you don't even need a set of couches at your house, because I don't think you ever sit down and rest. I think you're either in your little office there hammering away with your database and some notes, or you're out on the road. I don't think you need a couch.
Yeah, probably not, but that's the fun part. That's what I was thinking about. Actually, I kind of look forward to this time of the year. Pretty soon in February, it's kind of my downtime, believe it or not. There's not a lot of games going on. You got a lot of individual games, but no events really, And so I go see some individual games down here in Kentucky. Like next week is what they call the LIT, Louisville Invitational, and they have a lot of the best teams in Kentucky playing in a tournament, and they play at Bellarmine University. It's a D2 school in Louisville. So I might head down there for a couple of days. And then there's a tournament this weekend also here in Kentucky that has some out-of-state teams and some of the best Kentucky teams. That's four games Friday and seven games Saturday, so hit that. But things will slow down a little bit until March, and then you'll start getting state tournaments and stuff. So that's the way it goes.
Well, God bless you, and obviously you always wish you safe travels. And I think you're the type of guy that has to get his oil changed on his car pretty much every couple of weeks with the way you travel.
Well, the good thing is I usually rent cars, to be honest with you. If I'm not going very far, I'll drive my car, but most of the time I rent cars. So,
amen.
Yeah. So I don't have to get the oils changed.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Keep the wear and tear off of your car, that's for sure. All right, good stuff.
That's right.
Well, Brett, we'll try and squeeze in a tidy show. You know, maybe an hour. You and I say that, and then we always tend to
that
go like
good.
An hour and a half.
Yeah.
But we'll see if we can. Obviously, there's not a ton of stuff, but there certainly has been a few pledges at minimal. And then, as I mentioned to the audience at the top of the broadcast, you covered the Crossover Classic in Atlanta, so we'll certainly want to get your thoughts and recap on that. But let's fire away, and let's get to some of these pledges.
Okay, yeah, one was, they kind of did this last year, was USC, University of Southern California. They got a commitment from a kid out of Ohio, Paige Warren, 6'4", out of Dublin Kaufman. And she's basically, last year they took a kid kind of like that, but she was from South Carolina, but more athletic. But this kid is more of a true low post presence, you know, kind of low block. She's a true more center type. And she played for the Capital City Stars AAU team when she played. But they picked her up because she's one of those. She's probably, if you want to compare, she's not like that, but in the sense, but kind of think of Stephanie Dolson when she first hit UConn, how she was kind of bigger, you know, but she didn't quite have the footwork and the skill that Dolson had when she hit UConn. They kind of have the same builds. They're probably kind of about the same size, Warren kid Paige is. She's very good about being physical, and she bangs on the block, and she knows how to get good position and use her body. And, you know, when she catches it, she does have good hands, and she can finish through contact. So it's hard to find post players late. So I can see why Southern Cal probably took her, because she is a big low post presence and actually with pretty good skill. So it was probably a good pickup if they needed somebody in the low post.
Well, as a huge player development guy, which I know you were too, and a former post coach and at the Division I level, this is certainly going to put, you know, the USC coaching staff to the test to see how they can develop Ms. Warren. And, you know, so obviously there'll be a lot, you know, riding on how they develop her moving forward for sure.
Yeah, and I think they'll do pretty well. I mean, because it's not like she's raw and doesn't have any skill at all. She actually does have pretty good skill already. But the thing she does bring to the table a lot of times, which post players don't, she brings aggressiveness already before she hits campus. And sometimes kids have skills or footwork, but then they're not aggressive. So they can definitely work with her. With her aggressiveness that she already displays.
Well, no question, that's a big attribute, especially for a young post player. But, you know, for me, again, I always try and be candid. Hopefully it adds to credibility. But there are a lot of staffs out there that, for me at least, a guy who watches a ton of games, the jury is still out on their level of player development, and especially with post players. And so, you know, again, we'll certainly keep an eye out for USC moving forward and their development of Miss Warren. But moving along, what else you got? I know there's a big one, obviously, down in the South in the SEC out of the 2018 class, for sure.
Yeah, I guess you must be talking about Jasmine Massengill, I guess, for Tennessee.
I am.
And they came and played in that little tournament that we did here in Kentucky, because she plays on Hamilton Heights, which has – 6 or 8 Division I players, and Massengill, different people have her. I think she's in my top 20, I think 19 or something. But what I like about her is her size. She's a 5'11 point guard, and you don't see that to have size like that. And she's a great athlete. She's good. She's good. Her shot could use a little work from the perimeter, but other than that, she's long and she can guard different people, and she has a good feel for the game, and they can play her at the off guard even if they wanted to. But she does have that point guard mentality where she'll go get the ball and take over and, you know, run the team, and there's a lot of them that can't do that. So I think that was that was a great thing. They got she and Hayes, Anastasia Hayes. So they can play the point for them. So
and Westbrook.
Yeah. Westbrook, if they want to play Westbrook at the point, they can. Yeah.
And you already know I have a few thoughts to follow up with it, and hopefully, you know, listeners tune in, expecting that we'll always provide, you know, honesty and candor while also obviously supporting kids and women's basketball. But credibility means everything. And I have a couple thoughts. First of all, it's been a great week for Tennessee, obviously, you know, coming off, you know, the big win over Notre Dame, in which I think to me that was one of the real signature wins for Holly Wallach, even though she's been to multiple Elite Eights in her tenure there. To me, anytime you and I will both certainly sign off on this, if you beat a UConn or a Notre Dame team, you got to do a lot of things right to beat those programs as far as your product, as far as both ends. And Notre Dame had a lead in that game, a comfortable lead, and Tennessee kind of stormed back and defended really well in the second half. And, you know, there had been a lot of criticism, including from me, about their product over the last few years, the discipline, the execution, the X's and O's, and, you know, certain aspects of coaching. But, you know, there's no way you cannot give the credit where it's due to the kid, to the coaching staff, to the kids, the team, Diamond to Shields for stepping up. They did a terrific job in coming back and closing out that game. And if you beat Notre Dame, you've earned it. You've certainly, done enough things right as far as your product. So, again, congratulations to Tennessee on that. On that big, big win that they had. And then they've also, as you certainly know, been getting it done on the recruiting trail. You know, as far as high school players, they've had either 1 or 1A recruiting class in the 2017. They certainly had a big class. We mentioned Anastasia Hayes. We mentioned Avina Westbrook. You know, they had a couple others, the big kid from Florida. So, you know, they've certainly, you know, gotten recruiting back up on a high level, and now they're reaching into the younger classes. And Jasmine Massengill certainly is an elite-level player in the 2018 game. Like you said, you know, just a big athletic guard. And so, again, congratulations to them keeping their high-level recruiting rolling. As far as Massengill now, there's a couple things. You know, and I thought you alluded to it. Certainly with her size, her ability to dictate off the dribble, to actually play the point guard position at that. I agree with you with the shooting stroke. To me, it needs to be refined. It's the kind of shooting stroke that, for me, you know, can get hot on the high school level, but tends to be the kind of stroke when, for whatever reason, when you get to college and get some of those same looks, they don't go down as much. So I think she definitely needs, some refinement with that stroke. But there is a foundation and a capacity there where she certainly, can be a good shooter moving forward if she puts in the work and gets a little more refinement. Now, as far as the decision, certainly you and I have always been consistent in supporting all kids, and we certainly hope it all works out for her. But I even said to you off air that it was kind of ironic to me that within days after we had the conversation last week here on Ladies Night about kids not surveying the roster, you know, or the landscape of the recruiting classes, that she would pick Tennessee, because certainly with Avina Westbrook, who, as you just referenced, and certainly I support, can play either guard spot, probably wants to play a point guard spot maybe in college, but we'll see how they use her. And Anastasia Hayes, I mean, those are two frontline guards that certainly can man the point guard position. Certainly Westbrook realistically can play a combo with her size. And then now you have, you know, Massengill just a year later. I mean, that there's certainly a dynamic there when she's going to, you know, obviously she's a Tennessee kid and loved the opportunity and jumped on the opportunity to play for the famed school in her backyard. But when she gets there as a freshman, she's going to realize that there's maybe, you know, three kids for a couple spots in that backcourt, and it's not like there won't be a ton of other talent at the other wing spots or, you know, whatever. So it'll be interesting, and certainly I think you and I are on the same page. We hope it works out for all parties involved. We hope it works out for the young lady. She certainly, you know, obviously wanted to be a part of the Tennessee program, her home state team, but there certainly is potential issues there as far as how many spots for how many kids that are, you know, in back-to-back classes. And so it'll be interesting to see how that goes, Brett.
I agree. I'm with you on that, and that seems to be what's happening now, that the kids, you know, the kids, maybe they look at it, I don't know, like you said, at the roster. But the thing about it is, too, it's always nice to think you're an elite player in your class.
Exactly.
But when you go in and there's other elite players that have already got a year or 2 years under their belt, it's going to be hard to go in and take their spot. Now, if you go to a program that's really bad and
right,
they're not good, then, yeah, you might slip in there and steal a spot. But it's going to be hard to steal a spot from Anastasia Hayes and Avina Westbrook and all the people you just said. So I agree with you. So like I said, hope it works out for her. I think probably a lot of it in my mind is, you know, Tennessee's an icon and a lot of people want to play at Tennessee, and I think that's great. So I'm like you, hope it works out for her, you know, because you can get so much talent. Yeah,
we certainly do. That's all we want for kids. But again, how to bring up the devil's advocate side of it? That's certainly, again, there are two elite McDonald's All-American caliber backcourt players, you know, coming in just only 1 year before us. So you're looking at 3 years of that dynamic, where there could be, you know, a little bit of a logjam there as far as elite players in a couple of spots. So, but again, we'll see how it worked out. Hopefully it does work out for the kid. And again, it points to, once again, you know, Tennessee has certainly got recruiting right back on an elite level, because we certainly know about a year ago that they had struggled and really hit a low point, you know, with recruiting. But they certainly have it back rolling again. And, again, kudos to the program for getting it done at least for one game, you know, on the court as well. But moving right along, Brett.
Our old buddy Scott Allen from Paul Six, I think you talked about her in one of your summaries. Remember when you watched Scott's tournament that he had back there the first weekend in December, and the girl Kate Klimowitz, the 6 foot. Kind of, I'd say more of a wing player in the 18 class, has committed to Eric Johnson at Boston College. And, you know, she's, you know, the thing about her is she's one of those fundamental kids. She can score, you know, shoots the three and score some. But the one thing about her, she is a competitor. She does compete. She does have a good motor. She does play hard. But in my mind, I think she's a very good player, but I'm not sure that she's an elite level type kid, you know, that's going to come in and help them in the first year or two. But I think she will give them a lot of the intangible things and do a lot of good things for the program. So I think you talked about her some before when you summarized his tournament back in first week in December. Weekend.
Here's my thoughts, and I did. I talked to her when I saw her at that, you know, at that event. I certainly thought she was a winning player, but again, as you're alluding to, and God bless you again. You know, our job is to be honest here. We're certainly never trying to be critical, even though sometimes it might come off that way, especially to sensitive ears. But to me, she's definitely a mid-major kid. That was the best fit for her. I think she could have had a really nice niche and, you know, and played consistently at a level that fits her. I don't really, again, hopefully she proves me wrong, but I don't think that the ACC level is the best fit for her. So, you know, again, hopefully for BC, you know, again, I'm proven wrong and it works out exactly how they have the design for it. But she certainly knows how to play, is a part of a terrific program, but I certainly think she could have carved out a much stronger niche for herself at a mid-major program, you know, so that would be my evaluation of the overall situation and of her. But she, again, she is a winning player. But, again, I think the ACC is swimming in some deep waters for her. But, again, hopeful that's, you know, time proves everything, and we'll see how it works out for her. But, you know, for me, if you're BC, while you certainly have to continue to get winning players as they continue to try and overachieve in that conference, it'll be interesting for sure. That seems like a little bit of a reach. But, again, as always, we'll see.
Right. And see, I always tell you, I have that way of evaluating where they're low D1, mid D1, marginal high major, and major. And marginal high major means you're better than a mid, but maybe not quite a major, or it may take you a few years. I can give her that marginal high major, but I agree with you that a lot of those kids, there's always exceptions, but a lot of those kids tend to do a lot better and are more successful at the mid-major level or whatever, and they can play at the top mid-major players, or like maybe she could be a good player at James Madison or something, maybe, or, you know,
well, William and
or Hofstra,
I tell you a program,
somewhere like that.
I tell you a program. I think, again, this is one man's opinion. Certainly, it does, I'm not God, yeah. And you know, and kids make their own. But I tell you a program in her backyard that I think, you know, a surging program that I think would be ideal, including how they play. A program like William and Mary with Ed Swanson.
Oh, yeah.
And what they're doing,
yeah,
now. I mean, I think that's the perfect kind of program and level for players like Klimkowicz. But, again, she can prove me wrong and hope she does.
Yep. That's a good analogy. I like that. And actually, they're doing really well this year. Ed's got them rolling
there
this year. And that's the thing. See, I always tell people that the way I do my ratings, the ratings, like if I rate them a 91, I say they're a marginal high major. Well, Ed's gotten a few of those type players, and I think Klimowicz can be that type of player. And you know, so where she can be better than a mid-major, and that way she should be an all-conference performer in a couple of years there, whatever, you know. Whereas at Boston College, if she's in the 1-8 rotation the first year or two, they're going to be in a little bit of trouble. So,
no question. And here's the thought too, Brett, which I know you sign off on. At programs like William and Mary, or certainly more mid-major, her 6-foot size now stands out. It winds up becoming an advantage for her as a wing player. Where if she goes to the ACC, you're now looking at two guards that are 6'1", 6'2", and have more athleticism and stuff. So, again, that's where the bigger issue is, you know, she winds up being a real commodity at a mid-major with that size, with the shooting ability, and you know, and being a winning overall player. You go to the ACC, I mean, you know, the 6-foot wing players are a dime a dozen, and they have more athleticism, and so, you know, it's the far more, you know, uphill sledding when you go up that level.
Yeah. And one more thing I'll say about that, and then we'll move on, is if she played at, like, let's say, a William and Mary, being 6 foot, he could play her at the 2, the 3. He could even play her at a stretch 4, and she could be very successful. Whereas if she probably played stretch 4 in the ACC, and they took her down and posted her up with those other people and all that, it'd be really tough for her.
Good job.
So, all right, another big one was Destiny Henderson, which the 5'9 point guard that was on the USA team and from Fort Myers, Florida, and she committed to South Carolina. I don't think we've talked about her before. And she did a good job. She kind of struggled at USA from the standpoint of not necessarily a great shooter, and I think she is a point guard, but she kind of struggled and tried to maybe do a little too much, I think, basically, from what I heard and saw when she played, and didn't really necessarily have that great feel for the game. But she is one of the elite guards in the 18 class, and another big guard, 5'9", and from Florida. So South Carolina picked her up, and, you know, she has a great pedigree so far, and, you know, she's aggressive, and she's a good athlete, you know, fits in the SEC with all the physical aspects of the game. And she'll do well. She guards too, so that's something I know is important to Dawn Staley, because that's what she did when she was a point guard. So I think that was a great pickup. I think she's, you know, probably looks more to score a lot of times than she does to distribute. She does both. So I think you've seen her play some on film or whatever, haven't you?
Well, here's my follow-up, and unfortunately, I'm off to a little bit now of a start where I'm coming off negative. Where I'm coming off negative, but again, my credibility means everything to me, and you know, obviously, you know, Coach Staley has a certain type of guard that she's you know, she's been used to and looking for certain things. But what has been one of the issues for South Carolina in the backcourt over the last few years? One has been some degree of decision making, and the other has been perimeter shooting. And I think, you know, and they obviously have Taisha Harris on roster now, who's a little bit more of a pure point guard than certainly, you know, Quavos Moore, you know, has been, and that kind of thing. But I honestly think they need, moving forward, more consistent perimeter shooting. Like you say, you know, the perimeter shooting is still an area of vulnerability for Henderson. I don't see that. And here's the thought. You mentioned her size of 5'9". I don't think that's a big guard anymore at the power five level. To me, that's kind of like average size for point guards. And so I don't even think it's all that much of – her height is all that much of a factor. And I just – to me, it seems like another similar guard to what they've had – as opposed to kind of providing a little bit more of a different look to what they need moving forward. And I honestly feel that certainly I can understand why Coach Haley doesn't want to sacrifice any level of quickness or certain attributes. But moving forward, as they continue to be a program that, you know, recruits and gets big kids and is front court, you know, laden, they need to have back courts that complement that, to where that you have to honor all those perimeter players and allows for more spacing and doesn't allow for you to double down as much and those kind of things. And it just seems like it's another similar guard that doesn't exactly answer some of the vulnerabilities they've had in the backcourt.
Yeah, but it is a big guard if you think about it, because they had Khadijah Sessions, who was 5'6". Bianca Cuevas Moore, probably 5'5", let's say. And they signed Arion Bradshaw. They signed Arion Bradshaw last year in the 16 class, and she's 5'6" out of Boston. From that standpoint, they did get – and they got a bigger guard along with her and Taisha Harris is about 5'11".
I get what you're saying, that it's bigger than what they've had. But I think my point is that it's on the overall scale of where women's basketball is going, it's not really big compared to what your opponents, you know, will now be having and moving forward. So I get what you're saying for sure. And I think that's valid that it's bigger than what they've had. But I still think that that's a little bit of a minimized look at, in terms of just, you know, what they'll be dealing with is where I'm going.
No, I understand. I'm with you because, like I said, to me, there's two types of point guards, really. Well, really, there's three. One, there's the point guard that can run the show, but they really can't shoot or score. And then you got the other one that's kind of a scorer, but they can't really decision make and run the show. And then there's that true, what I call the true point guard, is what I've used this analogy several times on this show, is that if you play two games tomorrow, the first game, the kid comes out and she scores 20 points and has 5 assists. Okay, then when they play the second game of the day, she has 8 points and 14 assists because she has the ability to do what the team needs to help win the game. And there's not too many of them that can do that. So that's the ideal point guard.
Hey, Brett, since we're talking about point guards in that class quickly and also – we're talking about South Carolina, obviously, a team in the South. The kid Isabella Nicoletti that's in that class that I know ESPN has ranked, you know, near top five, and she's kind of a mysterious kid a little bit, but she's at the New Baptist Christian School, I suppose. That's where she's lifted. I haven't heard any. I remember, you know, reading about her this summer and watching some video and really haven't heard anything since, but if she's still a viable recruit, was she that – to me, that's the exact type of guard, you know, for just the sake of South Carolina, their program and their fans and Coach Taylor, I would love to see them get that type of guard, you know, again, right in North Carolina. Because to me, that's the type of guard I'd be real curious to see in a program like that. The kid just oozes leadership. Now, she's got 5'10", 5'11", so the kid can really shoot it. I mean, I'll be honest, I did a promotion on her for my website a couple months back, where to me, I thought she was like a little mini Diana Taurasi, the way she played, her emotion, the way she passed the basketball. She kind of had a lot of attributes that reminded you kind of a poor man's Diana Taurasi. And I would love to see that type of guard and see how that mixed with South Carolina and their post play and the leadership they need and the shooting capacity and just, you know, the overall, you know, distribution, playmaking, make people better type of, you know, raise almost like, you know, our girl Sabrina Ionescu has brought to Oregon and those intangibles that she has. She's obviously not a great halftime basketball player and leader from the backcourt position. And I'd be curious to see South Carolina with that type of point guard. And I'll give you another girl who obviously isn't as highly rated or whatever, that I'd be curious to see how she would, like a Tatum Weitenheimer that's obviously out of Texas in that class. That's, you know, that's being recruited big time by you know, the Big Eight and even the Pac-10. I would love to see that type of point guard in South Carolina and be curious to see how that point guard, you know, mixes in with their program, makes everybody better, is a true leader on the floor, the extension of the coach, makes perimeter shots, you know, brings a toughness and a leadership. That's the kind of point guard I'm just curious to one time see down there at South Carolina with the Gamecock program to see how that kind of point guard could complement everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I'm with you on Isabella. She's really a great athlete, but man, one thing she does really well, she is great. She'll just pick you apart in the pick and roll. If you go behind, she drops that deep three in on you.
Yeah.
And she's good in the pick and roll and the pick and pop, and she's got great court awareness. And, you know, like I said, she's a big guard, 5'9", 5'10 guard. And, you know, she is. I'll be interested to see where she goes, to be honest.
Right.
I would have figured somebody might have had her already wrapped up because, because she's really good. But you're right, Weitenheimer is just she's that All-American kid. She's tough, great basketball IQ. Just really knows how to play. He's a true teammate that, you know, that runs the show and, you know, is really an extension of the coach. And you put the ball in her hands and really don't have to worry about her. And it'll be interesting to see where she goes. I know Texas A&M likes her and some of the other Texas schools. And you mean like probably a good school where she'd go to be fit? Oklahoma. I think that's one of her schools is Oklahoma.
It is.
And she fits them like a glove. That they like point guards like her, and she fits. That'd probably be a great place for her to go, you know. But based on what she does, you know, when we say these things, we're not promoting one school or the other. I'm not trying to promote Oklahoma and say, hey, man, she should go there. Don't go to Texas A&M or don't go to other schools. I'm not saying that at all. It's just, you know, I just watched Oklahoma play on TV the other night. Who did they play? They lost to somebody. Oh, they lost to Texas. They lost to Texas Monday night. I was going back and forth. And that's the kind of, you know, they had Peyton Little that went to A&M and she transferred to Oklahoma and she fits like a glove there. And she's had a great career since she's went there. And she's just a Sherry Cole kind of guard and, you know, high IQ. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. And sometimes, you know, sometimes the coaches, not saying that South Carolina or any school, but sometimes coaches get caught up in, like I said, if somebody has so-and-so ranked high and by someone else, maybe not other people, and they get caught up in that instead of looking at what can they really do, you know, what can they really bring to the table to our program? How do they fit our program? And I think there for a while, over the last, I don't know how many years, 5 years or back before that, I think people were just looking at the rankings and saying, oh, man, they got her 20. We got to get her. And then when they get her, she just didn't fit. She wasn't what they thought she was, and she didn't really fit their program. And like you said, or maybe maybe they didn't look at the roster. They really didn't need to take her, even though she was supposed to be an elite player. And they went ahead and took her, and she never played, or, you know, this really what didn't work out for her.
Yeah, and just lastly for me, you know, again, just with the South Carolina, and again, hopefully, you know, I get proven wrong again, and Destiny has a great career there and answers any you know, questions that I might be posing. But I'd just be curious to see South Carolina, you know, recruit a point guard that kind of answers some of the vulnerabilities that they've been continue to have at that position in the backcourt, which is perimeter shooting, which is true leadership, takeover leadership, and, you know, a true floor general type that there's just no questions about their toughness and their leadership capacity. And, again, that perimeter shooting thing to me, the way their offense is structured and they continue to be a big front court, which, again, I love. I love the fact that they utilize and develop post players and they pound it inside. But to go along with that, you got to have the backcourt shooting that doesn't allow teams, you know, to cheat off, to double down, and also obviously, you know, allows for kickouts that kill teams and stuff. So I'm just I'd love to see them just one time, you know, with that kind of point guard and just to see how it works.
No, I think you have valid points, and you know, it's like you said, they've had some really elite post players, you know, over the last few years, and they're really hard to handle on the inside. And that's the thing. Sometimes that's the way basketball always goes. Sometimes you have the elite post players and you don't have the good guard, or then sometimes you have the good guards and you don't have any post players. It's hard to get on the same page and get the, you know, the guards and the post players at the same time. But that's really one thing you have to give South Carolina credit for, that they've gotten some great post players, you know, fours and fives the last few years. And they even lost a good one. They lost Jatari White that had gone there from North Carolina, you know, that she transferred to Texas. So she would have been another one in their stable. So, you know, they're having a good year. And like I said, we'll see how it works out when it comes to Final Four time. But I can remember what you were saying a couple of years ago. I watched Khadijah Sessions play in AAU, and she used to knock down threes. But I saw several games when they played a couple of years ago where they weren't even guarding her. I think it was Missouri. They were playing Missouri, I think. And Missouri did not guard her. And they had the guard that was guarding her was 15 feet away and was standing clear back in the middle of the paint to help off on the lane of Coates and whoever their post players were. So, and they were taking the chance that if she did shoot it, that she wouldn't make them. Or I guess they thought, well, if she makes them, I guess we deserve to lose. But we're not going to let them pound it inside and beat us inside. So.
Yeah. And just lastly, before we move on, I mean, it's been no coincidence that Notre Dame and UConn have gotten to this Final Four after Final Four, championship game after championship, because they have perimeter shooting year in, year out. And when you get to the Final Four, your backcourt has to make shots. And I just think that's what's that's one of the things that's held them back in previous. Now, certainly this year they have, you know, between Gray
Davis.
I mean, certainly they have some capable, but the point guard position for them has certainly been vulnerable in terms of perimeter shooting and also, you know, decision making and reliable. So again, anyway, just my thoughts. Hopefully, it worked out tremendously, you know, for Destiny Henderson at South Carolina, and it winds up being just you know, the perfect fit. But anyway, moving along, Brett, what we got?
We got one more. Got a girl not too far from me, a girl named Maya Dunson, and she's a 5'10 lefty wing, and she plays at Huber Heights Wayne. That's in Ohio. They're actually a football power. That's where Braxton Miller, you know, used to be the quarterback for Ohio State. Yeah, now turned receiver in the NFL. That's where he came from, and the reason I'm familiar with that is because of the guy that coaches the team, the football coach. He's from my hometown. So I'm very familiar with him. And but anyway, Huber Heights Wayne's one of the better teams in the state of Ohio. And, you know, Kate Ochter's the new coach. You know, she was the assistant at Xavier. Yeah. And she'd be a good one to get on the show. Kate's really good. She was a great point guard back in her day at Bowling Green, and she'd be excellent to get on. And I know she's trying to rebuild the program.
She also was a former assistant at Xavier. And here's a quick little story about Kate.
Yeah.
When she was in high school, I was at Iona with Tony Bazella, the current Seton Hall coach. She came out for a visit and actually brought us, you know, Buckeye cookies or some sort of Buckeye thing that, you know, a symbol in the state. And so I'll never forget Kate, and especially for the gifts she brought to the staff, which were very classy. But, and then I know she was, you know, with Xavier the last couple of years or whatever. So that's a great little note by you that she's now on the high school scene and coaching at that place.
Yeah, and she's coaching at Loyola now. And this Dunston was an overachiever pickup for, in my opinion. Yeah. She's one that I think she could have been one of those what I call marginal high major kids, but she'll do very well at the mid major. But she's a 5'10 wing and she can really stroke it. She's got the deep 3-point range, but she's a good athlete. She's got the ability to put the ball on the floor and do other things, but she really shoots it well. So I think she'll really be a real blue chip player for Kate. So I think that's awesome pickup for her.
There's one thing for sure is that Kate will certainly be recruiting very heavily out of Ohio at her time, with her background in this state.
Oh, I think she will too. I think you're right. And the suburbs, when I was at that event up in Chicago, the Montini Christmas tournament, she was up there because, you know, it's right there in her backyard. So there's a lot of kids in the suburbs. You know what I mean? That can really help her out or whatever. You know.
Sure.
It should be interesting for her. But anyway, she got her, and then did we ever talk about Brittany Ward before the last time? I can't remember if we talked about Brittany Ward.
Yeah.
I think we did, the transfer from Butler that's going to Dayton, which is a good –
Go ahead. And speaking of, I had the new Dayton head coach, Shauna Green, on my replay podcast just yesterday, and she was a great spot, and they certainly now – I've really, you know, hit a terrific stretch, 7-1 in their last, or 8-1 maybe now in their last, eight or nine games. And she's really taken over and made it her team now, you know, taking over for Jim Jaber. And I'm really happy for her as all first-year coaches. But, Dayton now, and we both know they hit some, and we had talked about here on Ladies' Night back in the early fall, late summer, they'd faced some, you know, recruiting adversity when Shauna first took over, as can happen. They obviously had a couple of players that were committed to the program, basically decommit and go elsewhere. So now they've kind of stabilized everything, and certainly that's a big get for her to get Justine Ward from Butler.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. You're 100% right. And the thing I noticed, too, is one thing she really put an emphasis on is is more the defense. The defensive side of the ball, and she's put more of an emphasis on that more so than the offensive side of the ball, I believe. So it's a new coach, and you got to get used to new things, and they're figuring it out. And like we always say, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna. I didn't mean to cut you. I was just gonna say is I got to tell you, Brett, and you and I talk all the time about coaches across the country, and. You know, and time always proves, but I'm very, very impressed with Shauna. I followed her closely. I love her presence and her temperament, the balanced temperament aside. And I think the thing that's impressed me most, we talked about it in the interview I had with her yesterday, is that, you know, I can really relate to that position she was in, because just about 3 years ago, I took over, and you know the guy very well, Joel Pelican, who is just, you know, a legendary figure on Long Island at the Division II level. And, you know, they just a year before took the team, and I was on staff with him coming back from my cancer journey to a Division II national championship game. And I knew what it was like to take over, you know, for a really successful, you know, coach and how that first year can be. And Shauna and Dayton had a tough non-conference, you know, this November and December schedule as well. And so it can be very overwhelming. And like her, we both took over the job basically in early September, which certainly, you know, is very late and just adds to the issues of taking over a program. But she's honestly, you know, now got to go. And the thing I love is she was, you know, she had the courage to make some necessary changes, you know, that she basically, you know, about 3-4 weeks back when, you know, mid-December. And I just, I really have been impressed with how she's handled everything, you know, press conferences, interviews, her, you know, her sideline, her presence, her temperament, and then also, you know, really getting the product turned around and, you know, and going, you know, in the right direction now on both ends. And so very, very impressed with her. And I think we're looking at a potential, you know, emerging star. She just kind of has, you know, when you really study head coaches, I know you do as well. I just see a lot there that I think that the only question to me was going to be if, you know, how recruiting would now go. And I think that they're primed to get that going now too.
Well, yeah, I mean, just by getting Brittany Ward, I mean, she was, I think I had her number 61 in the country coming out. A lot of other people had her in that too. So she's an elite prospect that they picked up to be like a four player for them, 4-3. And that's the thing. She really fits their system, you know, as far as she can stretch it. She can be inside, outside, and I think probably the hardest thing Shauna had to do was what they've been trying to do before she, you know, even got there as a head coach was Jenna Burdette. Oh, Jenna Burdette could score 30 every game. They just have to almost threaten to put her on the bench to get her to shoot enough. And there's nobody that shoots the ball much better than her across the country. So maybe Kelsey Plum. And that's the thing. She's a top notch guard, and they'll definitely, I agree with you, they'll definitely keep it going, and I think she has a good little staff, and I think Dayton will, you know, climb right back up there where they were.
Hey, and Brett, and to follow up on that, they had, you know, and this is where I really think, you know, she's now gained total control of the team. They just had a huge win over the weekend at St. Louis, and I know you know how good St. Louis, you know, has been the last couple of years in the A-10, and then this year, even though, again, they're hitting a little bit of a low because they had that loss at home to a very good Dayton pro, and now they're losing big at, you know, Duquesne tonight. So they've been kind of under, at least for what I've expected of them returning so much, they've kind of been a little bit unevenness this year so far, and now we're hitting a little bit of a pocket here. But that to go to St. Louis, that was a real signature win for her, coming off a couple games prior where she beat Jen Rosati and GW, which is obviously, you know, a winning culture and a winning program there and a terrific head coach. So I think she's fully got this team now, not looking back, you know, at where, you know, what Coach Jaber had done there. And I think she's fully got control of this team now, moving forward. They're on a roll. I think they got everyone kind of believing. I think they're filling into some role. Again, to me, that's a very deep, talented team that I think is really primed to do well the rest of the way. Because, the biggest issue in the first year for a new head coach, and especially when you take over for a successful one, is getting it to be your team. And for the kids to stop looking back, to look forward, to fully believe in what you're doing and your presence, you know, and your messages. And I really think that she's at that point now where they feel good about both sides of the ball. They've had some signature wins now where the kids can say, yeah, this coach can lead us, you know, into such and such a place to get such and such win. And I think they're really in a good place. Certainly there's a lot of basketball work, a lot of work to be done, but very happy for Shauna. And again, I think it's a program that's primed to kind of get back to being one of the, you know, elite mid-major programs in the country.
Yeah, you're right. And like I said, they're doing it at the right time now, and you know they could technically, you know, win the conference, get in the NCAA, and get, you know, slip in, maybe win a game and get to the Sweet 16, you know, get the right draw and get the right people, you know, right.
They're now 5-1 in the con. And here's the thing, Brett, looking at their schedule. They now have four to five games coming up against the bottom tier of the conference as it worked out in the schedule. So they have a chance actually to get out to about, you know, a 10-11-1 type start NEA-10, which is, as you know, is a terrific mid-major conference, which can really give them some clearance and an opportunity to cement themselves in the top, you know, one or two of that conference. So I think, again, they're really in a good position if they can just stay healthy and stay locked in to, you know, to really kind of, you know, cement themselves again this year. Because last year, you know, probably following the program a little bit, they had injuries. They fell back 2 years ago. You know, they faced UConn.
Three ACLs.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, 2 years ago, everybody was talking about Dayton because they faced, you know, UConn deep in the NCAA tournament and literally went toe-to-toe with them for a half. But then last year, under Coach Tabor, the injuries were a precursor and a catalyst to the program taking a step back. But I really think, and again, there's nothing better for a first-year coach that happened in the first year, that they're primed to, you know, to really make a legitimate run at winning the A-10 this year. So anyway, here's the Dayton plug for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. And then now, well, I talked about Dunson. Basically, I'll probably just move on and talk about a few players, like at the Crossover Classic, which actually they had Olivia Nelson Adoda, which was really kind of funny because there were some people there that really I don't think had seen her play that much. And when she played, she didn't really play that well. It's really kind of strange. Because when you see him out on the AAU circuit, I mean, she did everything. And she was so good against a lot of different teams. And then at the high school level, they just, for some reason, they don't look like the same player, you know. Because I know I talked to a lot of coaches out on the circuit, and they were just all drooling from the UConns
to everybody.
You know, Louisville,
everybody was drooling over her, you know. And
I don't think that'll change, but it just didn't. Sometimes when you play on your high school team, it just doesn't carry over sometimes. Because sometimes that high school team is not a good team, and you're the only player on the team sometimes, and you're not as good, and it doesn't carry over. But she's definitely a talented individual. And at one time, which was kind of impressive, they had her out, and she was guarding the point guard. and she actually did a pretty good job of it. So that showed her versatility about being able to guard inside, being 6'5", and being able to guard a point guard out on the perimeter. So that was fun to see her. Go ahead.
I was interested to get, you know, your thoughts on how she played, because as you might remember, and maybe some of the fans, about, you know, 3 weeks back around Christmas, we had, you know, John McGraw from the Insider Exposure on, and
yep.
He had covered an event down in South Carolina that she had played in that, you know, also had Megan Walker, the number one or
yeah.
two player in
yeah.
the 2017 class, the UConn pledge, and she played really well in that event. I was so curious to get John's thoughts, you know, hardcore thoughts on what she had showed there, and so I was curious, you know, to see how she would play in front of you and get your thoughts. So it's a little bit of a shame that she certainly didn't have her best event or her best games, because I was curious to get your thoughts on what you saw from. But certainly, as you alluded to, you saw a bunch during the AU circuit,
yes,
so you're certainly very, very familiar on what she's capable of.
Yeah, I think she had 8 points in the game I watched there on Saturday. She only had about 8 points, and, you know, just really, I don't think she really even touched the ball that much. I don't know whether her team really got her the ball,
wow.
But I don't know. I've learned a lot though by over the years of sometimes you see kids play in AAU and then you see them play in high school the next year and you think, gosh, is that the same player I saw this summer? Or I know you experienced it where you're the assistant coach and you see a really good player regardless of who she is and you get the head coach to go watch her and then the head coach.
Yeah.
Wow, this girl, she really wasn't that good. You know, and really they are, but it's just,
I don't know, just sometimes it just happens that way. It's really,
you know, you touched upon something that truly is a theme in the landscape, especially for, you know, for college coaches. There's
yeah.
nothing like that dynamic where you're an assistant, you see a kid or whatever, and then, you know, you have to wait, and then maybe, like you said, you have to wait till the high school season or whatever, but you then have the head coach go out and see the kid, and the kid, just like you saw it, you know, sometimes it's when you see the kid, because they can have one event where they really show what they can do, and then, you know, can be a very next event or you know, later in, with their high school team, but maybe dynamics, you know, other dynamics, the kid really just doesn't show much at all. And you're like, what? The kid coach comes back to you and you're like, really? This is the kid you were raving about? And you're like, oh, my God, what happened?
Yeah. And it was
really weird. That's kind of the way it was. And, you know, like I said, she really impressed me the way she guarded on the perimeter. That was something that impressed me a lot. That I hadn't seen out of her before, but like I said, in the summer she just had such great footwork inside. Used either hand to score. You know, granted she needs to get stronger, but I know she's a highly intelligent kid, and there's
no reason.
And you know, all the big time schools are recruiting her because they see the talent in her, So I'm not really worried about her, you know, because in a way, Charlie Collier was like that.
She was really
a great, you know, a good player at a young age, and everybody thought she was good. And actually, Charlie really changed her body after a couple of years, and she wasn't near as big, and she was a lot more mobile, and she started, like, bringing the ball down, and she started catching shoot threes and shooting the three and doing other things, and people were going, well, gosh, why is she doing that? Well, and they looked at it as
a negative thing. I looked at it as a positive thing where she was expanding her game. She wasn't just a girl that stood on the block and tried to score, and that's what she's, you know, you got to give her credit. She really changed her game and improved her game, became more of a versatile inside-outside player and got in better shape and was more mobile and
I just think that's what Nelson Adota, what she really needs is just like anything else. She just needs to get stronger. Once she gets stronger, that'll even help her more.
So
I don't think we have anything to worry about.
No. But that dynamic you mentioned in reference to, you know, Charlie Collier is such a great sign for a prospect, especially one heading to Gino will be demanded. But to see her go through those transformations, you know, it just really speaks to, you know, to her appetite to want to be great and to excel. And you know, every kid at some point is going to have to make a transformation, have to adjust, have to change, whatever, whether it be a physical transformation, whether it be a skill transformation. And so as you alluded to, Charlie's kind of already gone through that. And so, you know, that's just a great harbinger of what she's going to, you know, of her opportunity to succeed in college, because she's kind of already been through, you know, change and adjustment and committing herself to being different.
Yeah. And then once she gets up there and gets under Gino's tutelage of learning how, you know, even how to play hard all the time and just the way she plays.
And he'll actually
be able to, I think, be able to kind of move
her around like a Breanna Stewart, because she's learned to shoot so well from the perimeter now, and she can face up. So if they got, you know, if they got a smaller person on her, then they can start her out high and you know, circle her down low and post up, or vice versa. If she's got a big on her, he'll start her low and then he'll bring her out on the perimeter, and she'll be able to handle that because she's already shown she can do that now. That's where she's really expanded her game. So I just think that, in my opinion, she picked the right place as far as Gino will know how to use her, and he'll make her, you know, she's one of the best players in the class,
and she'll continue to grow and blossom, and, you know, and she'll be, you know, first round draft choice when she gets out of there. So.
Yeah, and obviously it's easy to say, you know, every kid makes a good choice, but that is another, you know, case where, at least in our mind, it's just a perfect fit, you know, of a kid, of a talent, and a program, and how they utilize her and what they'll get out of her. There's no question, it seems like it has a chance to just be a perfect fit.
Well, I'll talk about a few more players here, and then there was a kid, Kayla Hubbard, who's 5'10". To me, it looked like she's gotten a little thicker, but she's a lefty scorer in the 2018 class out of Holy Innocents Episcopal School. But she's getting the major D1 looks, but she's a lefty, you know, kind of kind of, like I
said, thick, but she has that scores mentality where she really looks to attack the basket and actually has a pretty good, you know, pretty good mid-range game. And I think I have her in my top 125 or something like that in the class. So I know she's getting some SEC looks and things like that. Have you ever seen Kayla? I think she actually played. She played for the I forget what the name of the AAU team is. I think it was Team Hubbard or something like that or whatever. They were actually in the umbrella of Kirk Pointer, you know, who run the EYBL. They were kind of like his second team. I think they won the 15 and under EYBL too, I believe, didn't they? I believe it was. That was a team she played.
Yeah, I'm very confident. I have seen her because the name really rings a bell that I watched the kid and came away with an impression, and so I'm pretty sure I did, but I am blanking out as far as clarity to her exact game right now and exactly what I remember.
Well, the thing that kind of got me was when I saw her, she looked like she'd gotten thicker, you know, a little thicker and than I'd seen her before, because she's about 5'9 to 5'10, and, you know, she's a lefty. She did have a good summer and everything, and I don't know how many she scored in the game, but she probably scored 20 points in the game that she played in the other day. So, like I said, she kind of has that scores mentality. But let's see, then there's another teammate on her team named Kennedy Settle, Suttle, and she was kind of a 6 foot wing, or she could probably be a 3-4 type kid, but she was kind of a, you know, she's good, very good athlete, long, you know, strong college body, and you know, she showed the ability to score at all three levels. And I'm pretty sure, if I remember right, Kennedy, I think she might be one of Coach Moe's kids, you know, FBC Moe's kids, I believe. I think she played for him, if I remember right. And one of his many 40 or 50 Division I players. So, but she was another one. And then another, now that it's my segue in, there was another kid, Aviance A.C. Carter, who's a 20, a 5'10", 20 kid. She played at Wesleyan High School, but she is one of Coach Moe's kids. And she's always been one of those kids that at a young age was very successful, because she's about the same size now that she was a couple of years ago when she was younger. So she already had that 5'10 frame and already a strong body, good athlete, and could you know, handle contact and score inside, and also go, you know, attack from the perimeter, and had a good mid-range game. And I know she's getting Power 5 looks for her game and stuff like that. It's just, she's just one of those kids that at a young age that kind of already probably had her size and hasn't grown much more in the last couple of years. Even though she's only a freshman, she will not grow anymore. She's reached her full size, and she can just keep working on her game, you know, perimeter wise, because she's probably going to have to be a wing, but she'll be able to post people up and provide a lot of versatility for whichever team she decides to play for.
Right.
Okay. And I see who else. And I watched there was Riverdale was there from Tennessee. So they had Anastasia Hayes, which we've talked about, but then they had her one sister, Alicia Hayes, who's a 20 point guard, who's, is really, really high IQ, really has a great feel for the game. And she's Anastasia's little sister, so she's really learning really learning the game, and I think I won't be surprised if Tennessee decides to take her too in a couple of years or whatever.
Yeah,
you know. So
I believe that's almost kind of a done deal. I think it was kind of a both sides kind of agreement that that they would take all three sisters and that all three would go there. So I think it's kind of an unwritten deal already.
I think you're right.
I remember reading that.
And there's nothing wrong with that either, because they're all so
they have such great skill sets already. You know what I mean? It's like they have a great understanding of how to play the game, and they don't really try to do too much. You know what I mean? They have the ability to shoot the ball well and score if they need to, or they have the ability to be the distributor and run the team and get the ball where it needs to be. And they just, it's really, really great how they have, like Anastasia, I noticed her when I was watching her play in the game, that she was really attacking the basket and really looking to score more, sometimes more than she normally does. So, but I think she'll have a great career, but that's a nice thing to have where you know, that makes your recruiting easier, that if you know you can get the other two sisters and you don't really have to recruit them that hard. Because you know there's a good chance they're going to come. So that's a good thing.
I got to tell you, Brett, that's the one thing I really never, gotten done when I was a recruiter for a number of years, is getting like a sister act kind of thing to make my life easier. So I failed in that direction.
Well, sometimes it's hard because, you know, even nowadays, you know, look at the Samuelsons, you know.
Yeah.
Katie Luke wanted to pave her own way, and she came to Stanford, whereas Carly and
fucking. I can't think, what was the other one?
They both went to Stanford, right? Yeah, the other one
went
Bonnie.
To Stanford.
Hey, Bonnie, yeah, I forgot about Bonnie. Bonnie went there, and Carly went there, but Katie wanted to pave her own way, and she went to UConn. So. Sometimes it's hard to get the sisters to go there, you know.
I think she also wants to win national championships.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. And you know what? She's doing great. She's doing great. I mean,
oh, my
God. Yeah, like Gino,
hey,
I always watched his show after the game last night, and he was talking about that he was really on her at the shoot-around. He said she really had a bad shoot-around, and I was really worried about it. And then I didn't see her final stat line, but she was like she didn't
34.
Take as many shots. Yeah, no, I know she had 34, but I think she was like 12 for 16 from the field or something. It was a really high percentage, and he was really worried that she wasn't going to be ready for the game. She had a really bad shoot around, and she really proved him wrong.
Hey, Brett, you and I, we've already spent a little too much time, and that's my fault, you know, not keeping it to the high school side, but you and I already talked about, you know, the year she came out, and obviously the conversation whether her or Asia Durr was the best. I tell you what, this young lady, I sit there, you know, every night, and this young lady is a pro scorer on the college level, and she's only a sophomore. I mean, she is a ridiculous three-point sniper at this point at the 6'3 mark, you know, because it's not only just the percentage, she takes tough threes as well as, you know, the open station, and yeah, you know, and she makes, you know, the mid-range pull-ups. She scored. I mean, she literally looks like a pro scorer already. You know, and she's at the college level. And the kid has, ever since the first couple games especially, she has been ridiculously consistent and has taken the mantle of being, you know, that type A alpha scorer. I just cannot be more impressed with what she's doing as only a sophomore looking like a pro. I mean, she literally looks like a pro with the scoring arsenal that she has going for her already.
Yeah, and she's shown a lot. I forget which game it was. Remember the one game she was throwing up before the game? She was going off the court throwing up.
Maryland game.
And she scored 28 points or something in that game. I mean, that does a lot for you, because when you're throwing up, that takes a lot out of you. And I mean, I can't even think. The only person I can name that was sicker than her that did great was Michael Jordan in that one game where they, you know. And there's just very few people who can do that. So that says a lot about her toughness. And when she plays Gino for the next couple of years and she gets her defense into where it needs to be, then she'll be the complete player.
And it's coming. And she started, you know, I get to watch every game, especially because the SNY coverage here and all the posts. She's starting to rebound a little more. But I got to tell you, I sit there every game and just, you know, and again, I can be picky, but I marvel at just how accomplished of a perimeter scorer she is at this point, because she is just looks like, you know, you don't say about too many sophomores, but she literally, especially with the 6'3 size on the perimeter, she looks like a pro. She looks like a WNBA scorer that's playing at the college level right now. She really is that impressive.
Yeah, so in a way, what that makes me think of is Diana Taurasi. That's the way she was. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
she's carried that on. And, but the thing about Samuelson, does she just shoots the ball so well. Every game she's I think she's probably shooting over 50% from the 3-point line, I would think.
No, she's only at, I trust me, I check the stats every game. She's only at 47% right now, but not far off.
Yeah. Well, 47%. So what do you do? You add 15% to that at 2-point line.
Yeah.
She's shooting 62%. So I'll take it. I'll take it. So so basically, if she, you know, she's going to make 6 or 8 every game or whatever she does, and you know, like I said, we could go on and talk forever and ever. But
sure, I'll talk about a couple more, and then we can wrap it up if you want. Because there was only about ten teams there that day at the one I went to. So there was a few other kids. One was a girl named Ebony Williams, and she played for Hoover High School out of Alabama. They had a couple of Alabama teams, but she was like a 6-footer. In the 18 class, and she was, she was one of those two. I always say could be like a 2-3-4 type kid, and she had a lot of versatility, and she had the ability to go in and she could post people up, but then she could step away from the basket. She also rebounded well, and you know, had a pretty good motor, and I'd say she'll probably get some Power 5 looks, I would think. I'm not sure who's recruiting her or anything like that, but with her size and her athleticism, that there'll probably be some you know, Power 5 schools that'll be looking at her. And then there was another kid named her name was Joya Maddox. And Joiya Maddox, and she was a 5'10 wing forward, and she also played at Hoover High School, and she was a 2019 class, but she was one of those kids that, you know, really great athlete, and you know, she had the ability to really attack the basket, and she even showed me some type of floater in the lane, and she was actually a really good on-ball defender, and you know, kind of had that long, kind of a long athlete that could get in the passing lane. So they were a couple of kids that people could, when they go watch Hoover High School play, or they're in Birmingham, Alabama, that they would be a couple of kids to, you know, that maybe the colleges would want to take a look at if they hadn't heard of them. Let's see what else. And then I was going to throw in a couple of kids that we really hadn't talked about, but I know there's a kid that I keep seeing on Twitter that I actually saw this summer at Battle of the Borough, a girl named Tisha Thompson. She's in the 2017 class, and she's a 5'10", probably like a wing, but she's putting up some triple doubles in high school, and I would think maybe some people, with not a lot being there in the late signing period, that people might want to take a look at her. She plays at Hamilton High School in the Memphis area, and she played for the AAU team called Team Penny, you know, which is sponsored by Penny Hardaway on the girls' side. But she's just one of those – the thing about her is she's one of those tremendous athletes that really can elevate over people and has the really good mid-range game, and does have some 3-point range too, but really puts up good numbers. Like I said, if you're getting triple doubles, even if you're not playing against good competition, that says a lot, because you don't see triple doubles that much. And so that would be somebody. It's TESIA, Tisha Thompson, in the 2017. That would be someone that I would think some of the schools should look at if they're not looking at. Because there's really not a lot left on the board for them to choose from in the end. So have you ever heard of Tisha Thompson? You probably have.
I haven't.
I would think maybe. Yeah.
So
hey, maybe you have something for you to research a little bit. She is putting up big numbers this year. And like I said, I saw her at the Borough last year. And that team really did well at the Borough, the Team Penny. They got down and were playing in the – you know, they didn't play in the – with the Nike teams, but about all the other teams, I think they might have made it to the finals or the semifinals, if I remember right, because I was there that last day, you know, because they always play on the dead day, the 13th, when the coaches can't be there. And I was there that day, and she had a really good game, and she actually had a really good tournament. So I'm kind of bumfuzzled why nobody's picked her up. I don't know, is grades an issue? I don't know this. I'm just speculating because nobody has picked her up, and I'm surprised that they haven't, you know. So she's someone.
Did you just drop a dumbfuzzled on me? Was that did I quote you right?
No, nothing. Bum fuzzled. That means you're thinking, you're like, I'm saying I'm bum fuzzled because I can't figure out why. I'm thinking why more people maybe aren't recruiting her than they are.
Yeah,
or why
no,
maybe somebody
didn't
sign her, maybe didn't sign her early, possibly.
I didn't know
if
that
had to be at SEC type.
I didn't know if that was an Ohio. I didn't know if that was an Ohio phrase you were dropping on me there. I didn't know. I don't know
where I picked that one up. I don't know. I'm just, you know how it is. You hear all these different sayings in different, like when I first moved to Kentucky, I was talking to my neighbor. I said something. You know how you say something to someone and then you don't hear them and you say, well, excuse me, or something because you didn't hear them. Here they say, please. And I thought, what? I said something to my neighbor, Joyce, and she said, please? And I was thinking, what's she saying? You know, and around here in Kentucky, they say please when they don't understand what you're saying, and they want you to repeat it again. So it's kind of crazy.
But just quickly, you mentioned Thompson. Can you re-spell her first name again?
Yes, it's T-E-S-I-A, in Hamilton High School in Memphis. And she played for the Team Penny. Team Penny. Yeah, I think you might be able to find some YouTube video on her. I'm not sure. Like I said, I've seen her live, and she really had a good summer last year. So that's why I'm trying to figure out why. Because sometimes, you know, not trying to categorize or say anything. Sometimes Memphis kids or certain kids in certain part of the country, when they haven't signed early, sometimes it comes down to grades. And she might be a good student. I don't know that. And she just – maybe she's waiting on a big offer. She might be one of those kids that she wants the big offer, like the SEC offer, and she hasn't gotten it. So she said, well, you know what? I'm just going to wait and play my high school season and put up good numbers and see who's going to come calling in April or whatever, you know, for in the late signing period, which would be a good thing for her to do because I think somebody big might pick her up because she is a tremendous athlete. So And she can score. I mean she scored her points this summer and she showed she could play against. I saw her play against really good competition. She wasn't doing it against, you know, lackluster competition. It was really good competition, and she really excelled. So she's one that somebody could look at. I thought about a couple. And there's another kid that that's really I've seen some stuff on Twitter that I've seen her play a lot, a girl named Sydney Harvey, and she's an 18 kid, a 5'8 point guard out of Brentwood Academy down in Tennessee. And she had a great summer, and she's played very well this year, but great skill set, lives in the gym, great handles, shoots it really well. I think Vanderbilt, some of them are really looking at her, you know, and I think she's kind of a sleeper guard, and she spells her name S-Y-D-N-I, a little different, Sydney Harvey. So in case you want to look her up, I'm sure people are familiar with her. I think she played with the Brandon Wright. Brandon Wright was the AAU team, and that's who she played with during the summer. But her stock's really, in my opinion, has risen. So she's kind of a sleeper type kid, and she's got 5'8", 5'9" size, so you know, good size, but has ability to handle it well, shoot it well, and she really really spends a lot of time in the gym, which, as you always say, as coaches, you know, we love those kids that like to spend time in the gym. So she's another one that possibly to you know.
that in the 2018 class, that I feel like her stock will go up, and I think more people will start paying attention to her now, actually. So,
well, I definitely plan to research her tonight and see if I can learn a little bit more. Good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then I'll do about a couple more, and then that'll be it. Is another kid here in Kentucky that I've seen. I'm actually going to see her this weekend again. Her name is Shelby Calhoun, and she's a 5'10 guard out of it's called Christian Academy down there in Louisville, and she's in the 2020 class. And her father, I'm not sure what his first name is. He was a player at Louisville, and she's putting up some good numbers up here already. She's definitely on the BCS, you know, Power Five radar of a lot of schools, and she's actually a physical player already. She's athletic, and she can draw the contact and finish through the contact, and she shoots it pretty well, and she really really at all three levels, actually, and she actually can score for being a young freshman, and so she's one that some people probably are looking at, or if not, they will want to look at, because being a young one at the freshman level, you know, 2020. And then one other freshman actually I saw at the Chicagoland thing I went up, but I've actually seen her play quite a bit. They came to a lot of events we did because she played with the Mac Irvin Fire, was a girl named Kayla Green, and she's a 5'6 point guard, and she plays at St. Joseph's High School, which is up there in the suburbs of Chicago. And but she was she's really quick. She's already got a college body. Has a tremendous feel for the game already. You know, has a smooth game. Doesn't look to do too much if she doesn't need to. Probably can be that point guard I was talking about that can score, but can run your show too and get you 20 points one game and get you 8 the next. But with the 14 assists, I think she kind of has that type of ability. You know. And that's what I liked about her. A lot of these young kids, they try to do too much and get out of control. And like I've seen her play a lot in AAU in the high school game. She didn't even start. She didn't play as much in the game. And she could, because when she was in there, she really excelled and did a lot of good things. And she really didn't try to do too much. So that's just a couple of young kids that that maybe – people would maybe want to look at her. Maybe you can research them too if you want. Check them. Sure. Check on them more. Shelby Calhoun and Kayla Green. So, but that's really about all I have for tonight, as far as talking about the kids we talked about. And like I said, I'm going down to Kentucky this weekend, or I'm in Kentucky, but going to Louisville to that. The Mercy Academy puts it on. He does it every year. It's a really good spread. He's bringing in, Toledo Rogers has Zaya Cook, the really good 19 guard out of Ohio. And he's bringing in Incarnate Word that has some really good talent. And then he's got the best. And then he's bringing in Montini Catholic, who played on our little thing, who's probably the number one team there in Chicago. And they're actually playing the number one team, Louisville Butler, on Saturday. So that should be a good Montini could lose their first game Saturday. They could or could not.
Who's on Butler? Don't they have one or two headliners?
Jalen Penn.
Yeah, that's right. Jalen, and obviously she was who I was thinking about.
And then they got two other guards. I think Tasia Jeffries, I think maybe it's already going to Eastern Kentucky. And then they got another guard, I can't think of her name, it's going to for Lisa Stone at St. Louis already. And then they got Jalen Penn, and then they got some other young guards too. And they won the state last year, and they're favored to win it this year. Louisville Butler, and they got Larry Just, who's the coach, and he was a D2 coach. Why can't I think of the name of it? Out there in Illinois, he was a D2 coach, so he's got an advantage over other people in a sense where he understands basketball, and they play hard and they press, but they move the ball and play well as a team. So they're definitely the team to, I think them and Mercer County, the one that shoots all the threes, they're the two best teams in the state. So at this point, So yeah, it should be some interesting games there on Friday and Saturday. So.
Well, I'm also happy that you'll have a relatively small travel trip for you. I like it any time that you can get a little bit of a break on the travel. It always makes me feel better because I always worry about you on the road after.
Oh yeah, well, I appreciate it. No, but the thing is, usually I live an hour and 15 minutes from the school because they play it at Mercy Academy. But I just decided this year, I don't know why, I'm just going to go down because there's four games. It starts at 4 o'clock and the last game's at 9 o'clock on Friday. So I'm just going to go ahead and spend the night and then watch all the games and then just come back home Saturday night after it's over. The last game, I think, is at 8 or 9 o'clock on Saturday, and I'll just come back home. Normally I don't do that, but I'm just going to do it this time.
Your wife probably scheduled that. She's like, you know what? Go ahead, stay overnight. I don't need to see you. So.
Nah. She doesn't care. Whatever I want to do. It's just, you know as well as I do, and that's the way I am now. It's like you travel so much that whenever I travel now, as soon as I can get back home, I'm ready to get back home.
and not just stay
out on the road all the time because, yeah, you know how it is when you travel all the time and, you know, you were a coach and it's fun when you're young and, you know, and stuff like that. And everybody says, oh, wow, did you go do this or did you go do that? And I said, well, no. I was in the gym from 7:30 in the morning till 10:30 at night. So I wanted to grab me something to eat and go back to my room. And I'm happy,
I got to tell you, just a quick note on that. And obviously before we wrap up, how many times that you and I would come across, young coaches in the profession or, people just getting out of college to talk about wanting to be a coach. I say, you better be a junkie because, exactly what you're just saying, the lifestyle of the rigorous travel of, spending all days in gyms, it's not as glamorous as it always seems, and if you're not a junkie that absolutely just loves games, loves evaluating kids and all that stuff, it really can be a grind and wear on you. And like you say, you spend so much time away from home and stuff and then living out of a suitcase that if you're not a junkie, it's just not the right profession for you and stuff. But like you say, certainly with what you do, I mean, every week traveling 365, any opportunity you can steal, to get back home and sleep in your own bed and get a home cooked meal or whatever, you'll usually, jump on it. But anyway, Brett, what I wanted to ask you before we wrap up is, it was obviously the McDonald's All-American, nominee came out as far as, who's going to be in the actual game for the boys and the girls. And I was just curious if there, obviously every year there can always be a little bit of controversy and you'll have, at least a handful of kids that are kind of ticked off that they didn't make it or think they should. I mean, those arguments and conversations will never end year in and year out. You can only pick 24, but was there anything of note, either surprises or one or two that you just were shocked that didn't? I mean, was there anything that you came away from it with a strong thought on?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. Like one thing, I vote on that, and all the kids I voted for, except exception of probably 4 to 5, I think made it. But what McDonald's always says is though, they want you to base your decision more on how they do in high school. So, I was wondering if Destiny Littleton was going to make it, and she did because, she's scoring 60 points out there in California. The one girl that I thought should have made it that didn't make it based on what I just said, I don't know how Andra Espinosa Hunter didn't make it. She was on the USA team. I know that doesn't have anything to do with McDonald's. And she's going to UConn, which a lot of times I think that pulls weight. And she's averaging 43 points a game. So I was kind of surprised that she didn't make it based on that's what they do. But I guess what the other voters, for some reason, they thought she shouldn't make it. And then another thing I look at, because people put a lot of emphasis on it, is they always want to know how many Nike kids made it, EYBL kids, and how many non-Nike kids. So according to what I saw, 17 EYBL kids made it, and 7 non-EYBL kids made it out of the 24. So
all right.
I could be wrong. I'm pretty close on that. I'm pretty close. So,
right.
But I look at it every year, Coach Bill, and, you know, you can say there's 40 players or so that have the opportunity to make it. And so if that kid made it over someone else, then I think that's okay. But that was probably the one that stuck out the most to me was Andra Espinosa Hunter, based on, like I said, that they always say, base it on what they did in high school. So if a kid averages 3 points a game, you know, I think you got to consider her. And then the thing is, it's not like she's scoring 43 points a game in high school, and then she didn't do anything in the summer. She played on the USA team, and she's
going to UConn.
So that should tell you she's
pretty good,
you know. So
I love the fact that you, one, obviously, you know, with you being a voter, it's great to have you talk about it. But the other thing that I love is that you were able to provide the insight to the audience about, you know, what they want the emphasis to be on, and how, you know, and for it to be on more of their high school performances. And, you know, so thank you for providing that insight, because obviously most fans wouldn't know exactly, you know, what the emphasis is supposed to be on. And then they would largely just assume that, you know, that the AAU, you know, season has a big bearing on it. And obviously, you know, these voters are human. So while they can be told to, you know, to emphasize on one, I'm sure that obviously the other certainly plays, you know, a factor in their consciousness and all that stuff. So again, that was a great, you know, insight for you to provide as far as, you know, what is supposed to be the emphasis, you know, in the consideration of the votes.
Yeah, and that, another thing is, too, I just basically look at the players and I go by my rankings and how I got them ranked. But what it comes down to is on the last vote, you're supposed to
vote for five people at each position.
You know, point guard, shooting guard, wing forward, power forward, center. Okay, and so when you mark your ballot, you're told
that whoever you list first is going to receive 5 points. Whoever you list second receives four. Whoever you list third receives three. Whoever you list four receives two. And whoever you list at number five gets 1 point.
And so they tally
those up.
Actually, at that position, you know, with Destiny Littleton, she was
right on the cusp of being, I'm not making that or whatever with me, in a sense.
But I went ahead and put her in there. There wasn't much difference between her and the other girl because of what she was doing in high school and what she'd done. I just didn't say there's no way I could not put her in there, you know what I mean, because of what she's doing and the numbers she's putting up and breaking all those scoring records. And that's what they want, you know, in high school. So, it always
comes down, you know, to it that there's always a ton of players that there's kids you can put in or you cannot put in.
And if
they make it, in my opinion, that's okay. They should make it, you know.
And if they don't make it and somebody else does,
that's okay too. But that's really the only one I can think of was Espinosa Hunter that I was surprised about. That I voted on the Naismith too,
and she didn't make
that either.
So I was
kind of surprised about that too.
So, the way it goes. So she can just,
you know, it's actually to some degree it's been par for the course for Andra. You know, I think she's kind of been to some degree, you know, overlooked or underestimated at times or whatever. So I think she's probably gotten a little bit comfortable, you know, to that underdog role, even though again she is obviously going to UConn. But and she's the kind of kid who's mature enough to take it in stride and just use it, as, you know, as fuel and all that. And the one thing's for sure is those kids go into that program is the spoils that are ahead for them in terms of winning and opportunities to win championships and stuff. Because I know a kid like Lexi Gordon probably has a similar feeling coming out of the things too. You know, certainly she's, you know, a kid who's on that kind of cusp, and I'm sure she kind of, you know, is going to use it now for fuel for fire. But I don't feel bad for those kids because they certainly have plenty of spoils coming ahead. But, you know, the bottom line, Brett, is, and you alluded to it, I mean, there's about, you know, 40 to 45 kids at least that certainly, you know, could be worthy of it. And, you know, if they were picked, you couldn't really, you know, go to the mountaintops and scream about it. And it's just always going to be the case. There's always going to, be kids who are worthy and don't make it and all that kind of stuff. It's one of the unfortunate things about when the list comes out. Obviously, you're happy for the kids that got it because it's going to be a very memorable experience in their life. And then there's obviously, kids that don't get it. And it's always, a degree of subjectivity because you have a bunch of people, voting for them and all that stuff. It's an unfortunate aspect where it should be a very positive thing. Unfortunately, there can be a negative side that you have kids and parents and, high school or AU coaches that aren't happy that their kid didn't get it. But it is what it is. And for most kids, the real bigger deal is what's going to happen the next 4 years. And so, kids like Andre certainly have a chance to have the last laugh and have some brighter, certainly some more rewarding days ahead because of where she's headed for sure. I got to be honest with you, Brett. And again, maybe it's easy for me to say because I wasn't in that, I didn't have that opportunity. But if you asked me which I'd rather have, the opportunity to go to UConn and win championships or to get a McDonald's, I'm pretty sure I'd sign for the former. So, certainly that's a big deal for those kids. They're going to just be the best program in the country, and they got chance at, a championship for all 4 years.
Yeah, and she can just make them look bad because back when Alyssa Thomas, you remember Alyssa Thomas?
Yeah.
That went to Maryland, right? Yeah, well, that year she didn't make McDonald's either. And I think on everybody's recruiting list, she was top 10. I think I had her number 6. She did not make McDonald's. She did not make the WBCA game that they had at that time. And so she didn't cry about it. She just went and became the ACC Player of the Year, I think, for 3 years. So, but she wasn't good enough to make McDonald's. and I don't think it wasn't like she wasn't any good going into college. Everybody knew she was an elite player, and so she didn't whine about it. She just went and kicked everybody's butt and was the ACC Player of the Year for 2 or 3 years. So that's the way you do it. And like I said, Maryland went to the Final Four a couple of years and stuff like that, and that's way better than. Then like you said, you get in McDonald's and then you go and, you go to a school and you go 10-20. That's not very good. You want to be successful as you go. So, and just because on the other hand, if you're a McDonald's All-American and you go to a school and you don't have a good career, just because you were a McDonald's All-American, that doesn't ensure that you're going to go have a great career. The chances are you will, but it doesn't mean that you would, that you will 100%, so.
And all it does, honestly, is put more scrutiny on your college career because then you're fully expected to, to do certain things. The one thing that Dick Vitale says that makes sense, and every year at this time of year, he always says, for all you McDonald's All-Americans, there's, 200 kids, there's tons of kids out there that are in a gym right now working and getting better or whatever, so, ultimately, that's what it's all about. Do you keep getting better? Do you keep achieving, moving forward? And but anyway, as we say that, congratulations, okay. Congratulations to all the young ladies that did get the opportunity and will be playing, in the game, and it certainly will be, a lifetime memory for those young ladies, and certainly they put in hard work as well to get the opportunity, so congratulations to them. But, Brett, we've made it through even another hour and 38 minutes. We always think about maybe sticking through an hour, and we can never do it because you and I always have so many thoughts to share and expand
some
conversation.
That's true. Yeah.
Certainly, Coach Bill is. But certainly, Coach Bill is. But once again, Brett, thank you so much, for your contribution tonight. And we'll certainly look to get back at it next week. And like you said, we'll get a recap of your event, event in Kentucky that you're covering. And I'm sure there'll be at least a couple more pledges. But thanks so much again, Brett.
All right, man. Yeah, I appreciate you, Bill. Keep doing it. You're knocking it out of the park there on talking to your coaches and promoting women's basketball. You're doing what you set out to do, and I think it's a great thing, and I'm glad I can be a small piece of it. So until next week, bid you good night.
No, well, you're a big piece of it, and again, you're just a huge piece of this lady. This Ladies' Night podcast wouldn't be anything without Brett McCormick. And the biggest thing, too, Brett, is, you know, when people try and say they like what I'm doing with the podcast, is there's no agenda, and the interest is just
right.
to help women's basketball. And that's honestly the reason why I bring that up, is because you are truly about that yourself, and that's what makes it so special to have you on each week, is that you truly care about, you know, about kids and women's basketball. And thank you so much for having that perspective and that kind
yeah.
of, you know, interest, because it's refreshing. It's extremely refreshing.
Yep. Okay. I appreciate you. Thanks a lot. You take care.
Same here, Brett. All right. Be careful. Be safe on that.
Bye.
Be safe, Wally. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. There is Brett McCormick. Once again, Brett McCormick, the elite recruiting analyst from the All-Star Girls Report. And I say it every week, and it's just facts. The man is an absolute treasure for women's basketball and a blessing on the high school scene for, again, all his 365-day coverage of high school basketball, his promotion of kids, and as I just alluded to, is just the purity of his perspective and interest. The man has no real agendas and will promote anybody and just really gets it, and it's just wonderful to have him such a prominent part of these Ladies Night podcasts every week. So once again, thankful that Brett McCormick joins us each week. But there's a wrap again, another about an hour and a half. We tried to give you, all the distinguishable pledges in women's basketball recruiting, and then Brett gave you a little rundown of some kids that stood out to him in the Crossover Classic event that was down there in Georgia. So, again, thankful to everyone who tuned in. Look for another show next week, likely again on a Wednesday night, and we'll be back at it, plugging along, trying to promote women's basketball and the landscape across the girls' high school scene. Take care, everybody. Coach Bill signing off from New York.